Hello friends, welcome to Running and Fitness with Raj. This show will bring you exciting and interesting guests and give you specific and actionable advice on your running, fitness and general health. Our guest today is the peerless Abhinav Bindra, India's first and only individual gold medal at the Olympics and former world champion. Abhinav has been awarded with the Padma Bhushan as well as the Rajiv Gandhi Khel Ratna Award, which is India's highest sports honor. These days, Abhinav is very active and passionately working on promoting grassroots sporting excellence in India through the Abhinav Bindra Foundation and Abhinav Bindra Targeting Performance. In addition, he is a member of the Athletes Commission of the International Olympic Committee, where his work includes helping developing frameworks for the mental well-being of athletes, as well as nurturing the refugee program of IOC. So thank you very much for your time, Abhinav, and welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, Abhinav. So my first question to you is, you have been a very determined and dedicated person from a very young age. I mean, just to quote an example from your, in a peerless book, your autobiography, you pursued Lieutenant Colonel Dhillon to coach you from a very young age, spent hours practicing. So what do you attribute this to, and who were some of the early influencers in this character development?
Well, I was not a naturally born or gifted athlete. I was not competitive in nature, definitely did not have the physical attributes of an athlete. As I said earlier on, I'm not competitive by nature. I was not coordinated. I did not have a good sense of balance. So I did not have all the natural attributes that were maybe needed or useful for being an athlete. But I did have one talent, and my talent was really to be able to work hard. And from very early on in life, when I set my mind into something, I would give it my all. That probably is my upbringing, what my parents inculcated in me. I used to see as a young child, young boy, my parents worked very hard in whatever they were doing. And I guess that had a very significant impact. They were my true role models. These elements also came into my being. And when I started to get involved in sport, which was a funny way where how why I got into the sport of shooting, because as a kid, I was not very interested in sport. I did not even like sport. I was a fat boy who hated to move, whose only real talent lay in missing physical education classes at school. And when one fine day I was introduced to my first coach, Colonel Dhillon, and I went to shoot, and I really enjoyed this sport, because to be successful, I just had to stand still and not run around. So that was the reason why I got into the sport of shooting. But ironically enough, to be successful in it, I actually had to run quite a bit, because, fitness was something which was my weakness and had to be converted into my strength. I fell in love with the process of the sport more than anything else. I just loved the sport. And I think that was the real reason why I kept at it for a long period of time. 22 years involved in the sport day in and day out is not easy, and that can only happen when you really truly love the process of what you do. You love the boring and the mundane, you love training, and you're at it every day when nobody's watching, and that can only happen when you truly love what you're doing and you're truly passionate about it. And that was what I was for the sport of shooting.
Oh, excellent. So that's a very good preamble to my next question. Even in shooting, which you started obviously at a very young age, you faced some really disappointing moments also. I mean, just to give you a couple of examples, you broke the world record at the age of 13. I mean, it's just incredible, but it was unratified. Officials were very skeptical, Indian officials that is, and they did not accept your 400 on 400 at the nationals. So how did you cope with this, and what sort of an influence did these events have in your later progress?
Well, of course, failure is always disappointing, and of course, when you have naysayers and critics, I think it's You just need to use it to your own advantage, and which I did from my early on. You use it to your advantage by getting more motivated to prove your point, get more motivated to work harder, to be the best that you can be. Naysayers and skeptics will always have a role in any career. And they do have an important role, I actually have to admit, because they push you. They push you to do better. They push you. They touch a point in your being, which is called ego, and they ruffle it a little bit. And if you do take it positively, it just pushes you to push yourself harder, be more demanding on your own self. It motivates you, and that is exactly what it did. Of course, apart from the two examples that you mentioned, failure was something which was always there, lurking around in the vicinity in my entire career. And an athlete fails more than how much they succeed, and that is part and parcel of sport, and that is the very essence of sport. Sport can never be scripted. It can never be broken down into black and white. And I think what you do have to do from failure is to learn to let go of the unwanted baggage, what comes with failure. You have to learn from failure. You have to learn from the experience and move on and try and be a better athlete, try and be a better human being. And that is the journey that you try and live as an athlete. It's about trying to better yourself and get better than what you were yesterday. And it is all about that self-improvement. I do not classify yourself as anybody as a failure if they do not achieve a certain outcome. The real failure is when you give up. And giving up for me was really never an option, even though I did have a few challenges in my sporting career.
Yeah, and now getting into the sporting journey, and especially the Olympics itself, in your second Olympics at Athens. In fact, your coach and some of the fellow shooters themselves believe that you were in even a better form at Athens compared to Beijing, where you obviously won the gold medal. And yet, for most of us, your fans and followers of the sport, even now after, 15, 18 years, it gobsmacks belief that in an Olympic venue, an ill-placed tile actually, robbed you of your gold. It must have really been a big mental setback. So Abhinav, how did you kind of come out of it? Because literally it robbed you of the gold, and it was something completely out of your control.
Yes, number one, I think time is the best healer. There are disappointments and setbacks, and I'm as human as anybody else, and I too was sad and depressed for a little while. But again, I still was committed to my goal. I was determined to achieving my goal, and I stayed honest to my goal. So again, giving up was not an option. It was a matter of getting up and trying again. It does help when you, again, I come back to my initial point. I truly loved what I did. I truly loved training. I truly loved working hard. And then when you're in complete love with the boring and the mundane, and the boring and the mundane is going out to train when nobody's watching you, when you truly love the process of what you do, that process always calls you back for more. And that joy and that feeling that you have when you are just trying to work towards something and trying to better yourself and to train, and it just claws you back after a while. There are disappointments, and Athens was a huge disappointment. But with time, I started to miss training again. My goals were still needed to be achieved. And of course, with support from family, I think environment makes a huge difference. I was in a negative frame of mind, but everybody around me remained very positive and remained having a lot of belief in me that, I can still go and win it, and that I will go out there and win it in the future. That was the environment that was fostered around me. And that really helped. I have to say that my entire career was in an environment which was a very psychologically safe environment. Although sure. I, as an individual, I'm an insecure individual, always accompanied by a lot of self-doubt. But the environment that I lived in, my family, my coaches, my support staff, remained very positive and remained unwavering in their belief in me, and which was extremely important when there was failure, because and when you had to find the energy and the courage to stand up again after embarrassing failures at times, it is these people who really give you a hand to stand up again. And I am again so very fortunate to have had a very supportive family and supportive coaches and support staff, and ever so grateful to them for allowing me this, giving me this environment where I could try and do my best. And I think that was something which was very, very critical in my entire career, especially in moments of darkness, especially in moments of hopelessness. You know, there were moments when I felt hopeless, but they continued to see hope in me. And that was truly magical, because that energy that they provided me when I was down and out was something special.
Okay. And, you know, leading up to, you know, leading up from there, you won the world championship in 2006. And I recollect, you know, many interviews in which you talk about how, you know, shooting puts a lot of stress on your body, especially the, you know, the spinal chain, because, you know, the posture is very unnatural and things like that. And you ended up probably not too surprisingly with a back injury, and you were in a, you know, lot of pain and distress. So how did you cope up with both your preparation, battling a back injury, and then, you know, go on to really win the, you know, world championship, which is probably as equally important as an Olympic gold?
Yeah, I think it is all about adaptability, and it is all about learning to adapt to different situations. You know, shooting is a sport which is a challenging sport on the body. It is a very asymmetrical sport. Puts a lot of load on one part of one side of the body. And secondly, it, you know, the human body is built to move. The human body is not built to stay still, and which is what we as a rifle shooting athlete, we are trying to achieve a perfect stillness of both mind and body. What I really learned from that experience, of course, it was a difficult experience to cope up with the injury, etc. But what I really learned about it, it is also about working to prevent injuries. It's not just about working on your body when you get injured, but it is a lot of work needs to be done in a preventive manner and mechanism, especially for athletes. Because again, you know, a certain degree of imbalance in the body is almost required for our various sporting activities across every discipline. However, the balance is very fine. You know, if you tip over to the wrong side, you can easily injure yourself. So it is all about learning to maintain your body. It is all about learning to prevent injuries. And my experience after this period really shifted my mindset and my training to a great degree, where I would now start to do a lot of work in injury prevention, always trying to maintain my body. And, you know, 50% of my workload shifted from the shooting range to the gym, because I just started spending a lot more time, of course, to work on my body to improve performance, but also work a lot on my body to prevent any sort of injury, or to prevent my body getting too imbalanced, which would also, apart from the injury aspect, also have an influence on performance.
Okay. And, you know, you initially in the first question, you talked about your love for the sport and the process. However, as you have evolved, you know, what we all understand is also that you became, extremely meticulous in your preparation. Like, you know, you literally weighed each bullet. You were so finicky about getting the fit of your shooting jacket very precise. Then you went through these, brain mapping and certain cutting edge, developmental process ahead of Beijing. At what point in time did also meticulousness get and this sort of a preparedness get ingrained in you?
Well, I think the experience in Athens taught me a couple of things. A, it taught me detachment from outcomes and really being focused on the process. But the second thing, important point that Athens taught me, that no detail was small enough to ignore. And it was all about working on various variables and taking every possible variable out of the equation. The third important element was working on that 1%. You know, at an Olympic final or at an Olympic Games, the top 15 or 20 athletes or even more have the same amount of skills. And on a particularly given day, they are all as good and capable of winning gold medals. So it's a matter of finding that edge, a little bit of an edge over others. And that edge necessarily does not come from training more in the shooting range, but doing things and taking inspiration from other areas and avenues in order to improve your ability to execute that skill. Your skill will perhaps reach a saturation point, but your personal ability to execute it more efficiently always has a lot of room for improvement. And that is exactly what I did. I started learning from avenues and people in various other fields. For example, I learned breathing techniques from deep sea divers, or I started learning balance exercises from downhill skiers. So it was about finding that inspiration from others. It was about learning from others, because you never know from where you can find something which will affect you in a positive way. And you can only achieve that if you have an open mind, if you have a flexible mind, and you're always willing to learn, and you're always willing to learn from other perspectives. I think that was very critical. But again, just to conclude and answer your question, it was always about trying to find that edge, and it was always about trying to take every possible variable out of the equation and just be as well prepared as you humanly possibly could.
Okay. I just want to jump a little ahead. I know most of the listeners would already have heard quite a bit about your journey to Beijing. I want to focus a little bit post that. And you went through a very difficult phase. And in fact, one of the things that you have said, which kind of remains in my mind, is this phrase: "Success was the real crisis." How did you deal with that phase post Beijing? And then, obviously, you did participate in Olympics, and you did come back to the sport. And how did you come back?
Yes, we earlier talked about failure, but again, to me, the true test and the greatest challenge of my life was actually failure when I succeeded. It was my life's biggest crisis. You know, for 15, 16 years of my life, up until Beijing, I had one goal, which was to win a gold medal at the Olympic Games. I would live this dream. I would go to bed with this dream and wake up every morning trying to pursue this dream. And one fine day in Beijing, my goal was achieved. I had this medal, which I chased for, in my pocket. And I was all dressed, but with nowhere to go. It was the success also created a great amount of void in my life, because it was I had just oriented my life for one particular moment and never thought about life post it. And one fine day it happened, and it left me woefully unprepared on how to deal with this unusual circumstance where I was suddenly left goalless and without a sense of real purpose, because my purpose had been achieved. A couple of things which were interesting from success. Great success is also very draining, so it does require time and efficient energy management of yourself. So when you do succeed, you know, it has drained you, and you do require time to find that energy and that deep desire for it to come back to a great degree. So that requires some time. And also the reason why you want to come back has to be is important. And for me, it was an interesting experience. Post Beijing, I actually wanted to give up the sport and move on to another calling in life. I was very confused what that calling may be. So I actually attempted to go on I went on a Vipassana course, which is a 10-day meditation retreat, in order to find my new calling and to find what I would like to do next. So I go on this meditation retreat where I'm supposed to meditate for 10 hours a day. But all I think of in these 10 days trying to meditate for 10 hours a day is I think back to my sport and I think back on how I could do it better. And that gave me a great self-realization. It gave me a realization that I still continue to love my sport. I continue to love my sport, not just for outcomes. I continue to love it for the process. And that was a great awakening of my own self and of my own mind. And I went home after these 10 days and I got back to training with renewed energy. Went on to compete in 2 more Olympic Games. I won medals at the Asian Games, won medals at the Commonwealth Games and several other competitions. But again, it was about being in love with the process, and the process actually got me back for more. Realization was very interesting. And I think another very important realization of success is that when you do succeed and when you do climb on a big mountain, on a peak, human nature and human tendency is that you want to now jump to the next peak. But finding sustainable success means that you have to first climb down, or go down this peak that you have climbed, and then try and climb the next peak again. So you have to go back to the basics. You have to plug the gaps or holes in your foundation. And after climbing down, you have to then start to climb up again. And the human nature is very different, because you want to just jump from one peak to the other, but that is not possible. And that was, again, an important learning when I did succeed.
Before moving on, I wanted to request all the listeners to please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or iTunes. It will only take you a couple of minutes, but it will help the show enormously and help other listeners to discover the show. So please do take a couple of moments to go and leave a rating and review on either Apple Podcasts or iTunes. If you are using another app which allows you to leave a comment or a rating or review, like for example CastBox, please do that either. We also request you to please check out the website runfitraj.com. And also, if you have any comments or suggestions, to please write to me directly at runningandfitnesswithraj@gmail.com. You can follow all podcast related updates on Instagram at the handle Running and Fitness with Raj, or on Facebook on the Facebook group Running and Fitness with Raj. Now let's get back to the show. And, you just touched upon the fact that you participated in multiple events, including the couple of Olympics after that. And very surprisingly, we hear you say that you, actually rate your fourth place finish at Rio even higher than your gold medal winning performance at Beijing. What do you mean by that? And why is that the case?
See, a gold medal is a great outcome, a fantastic outcome, but it is, for me personally, not the most important outcome. For me, the great journey in my sporting career was the journey of chasing self-respect. Okay. And I achieved that self-respect in my pursuit in Rio, where I was faced with plenty of health challenges.
Yes.
But I did never give up. I continued to push on. But the self-respect came from the reasoning that and from being completely honest to my own self, looking myself in the mirror and asking myself the more important question, that have I given it my best? Have I given it my best every single day? And really, in preparation for that, for Rio and for some of the other Olympic experience, I had given it my absolute all. And while I could not achieve the outcome goal which was desired, I did achieve, I was the winner in my own eyes. I had my own self-respect because I had done everything possible. And I was a winner in my own eyes even before I took the first shot at Rio. That experience, I think, was far more fulfilling than any gold medal could ever bring me. And, it was all about pushing yourself at a human level every single day, pushing yourself to become a better human being, pushing yourself to be better at whatever you're chasing, and by giving it your all with complete integrity, determination, and honesty of purpose. And that is exactly why I rate my Rio journey higher than others, because it truly was, I truly put in my best, gave it my all, many challenges along the way, but kept going on and kept finding solutions to challenges. And that was a very, very fulfilling experience. And in fact, a very fulfilling closure to my long sporting career. That is pretty much the reason why I am so kind of attached to that journey to the Rio Olympics.
Yeah, in fact, it kind of reminds me of, I think Satyajit Ray said this in context of movies, which is there are three kinds of successes, he has seen in his career. One is a commercial success, which is probably what everybody measures movies by, but there is also critical success and then most importantly personal success. So when you were talking about it kind of reminded me of that. Let's come to your book. I mean, your book A Shot at History is one of the best chronicles of an athletic journey or by anybody actually, in terms of its honesty, lucidity, and often sheer rawness, really. So why did you write this book, and what do you expect the readers to, gather and learn from the book?
Well, it was a matter of sharing my own experiences. I think the whole intention of writing the book was to also open up and be completely honest about my vulnerabilities, because I think sometimes people are scared about talking about their own vulnerabilities, but really, you can only help another person when you do open up and talk about your weaknesses and your vulnerabilities, because it makes you human, and it makes you connect with others, because others may be facing those challenges as well. It might not show, and all athletes generally tend to disguise their vulnerabilities very well, because what you see when they perform, which looks so effortless, is in fact sometimes internally extremely painful for the individual actually performing. So the whole idea was to give a very honest account of my journey in an attempt that maybe a young person reading it or anybody reading it can maybe take some motivation from it. And of course, I had the great privilege of having a great co-author with me. Rohit Brijnath is somebody who I deeply respect, and I consider him probably the best sports journalist and sports writer in the world. I am a great fan of his writing, so I am actually very fortunate that he agreed to collaborate with me on this project. It was a very great, good experience doing this project, because it was one of the rare occasions during my career where I had the liberty to actually look back at my career, because as an athlete, you really learn to live in the moment, not really think back too much on the past. So this was something which was very therapeutic to me as well, because I was able to at times let go of some unwanted baggage that I was continuing to carry. I was also able to pat myself back on my back on the smaller victories that I had along the way, which maybe during the course until then, I hadn't even acknowledged myself for achieving those small goals, because the larger goals are looming large and you tend to just take smaller victories for granted. So all in all, it was a great experience for me, and I hope that the people who've read it have had something to take away.
put it into their life practice.
No, absolutely. I mean, it's an outstanding book. And for just for listeners, I will link the link where you can get it in my show notes. In fact, I was also had also listened to a couple of months back. You did a live Instagram event with Rohit and yourself, and that was you know, really, really fantastic to listen to. Can we talk about your current involvement? I mean, you are working with the IOC. You are very passionate about mental health, as well as you are supporting the refugee program. And then we can also talk a little bit, to hear a little bit from your side on the Abhinav Bindra Foundation, you know, and all the work that you are doing.
Yes. So obviously, I'm a member of the IOC's Athletes Commission. And I try and do my best at whatever responsibilities I'm tasked with. And one of them has been at the project on athlete mental health, of course, something that I've been passionate about. And we've done a great amount of work. The IOC has done a great amount of work trying to build resources for athletes, build toolkits for sports organizations, and to actually build scientific recognition and assessment tools on athlete mental health. But the big important point and the big statement is to really work on breaking the stigma that surrounds mental health, and specifically athlete mental health, because I think athletes have for long been have had this misconception that you know, they are almost immune to any kind of mental health issues. But people tend to forget that athletes are human beings first, and that human well-being has also to be well taken care of, and as their performance is often taken care of. So that is my role with the IOC. Of course, the refugee program, maybe I'll talk about the foundation. The foundation, the Abhinav Bindra Foundation, is my primary outreach to Indian sport. We have three pillars for the foundation. The first pillar is intervention, where we built these centers of high performance called the Abhinav Bindra Targeting Performance Centers, which bring in best global practice and you know, cutting edge technology into performance enhancement in sport across sporting disciplines. We also, these centers also work tremendously on injury prevention, which again is something important to me given my history, and of course injury management if the case may be. We give out a scholarship program called the STEAM Scholarship Program, which is science, technology, engineering, analytics, and medicine. We give these scholarships to young athletes between the ages of 11 and 17 and try and bring all these elements into their training. My whole intention is to really work on the at the grassroots level, because that is the area where I see most amount of work that is needed to be done. And I think impact can be will be only created when we work at the grassroots level. Results might take a long time, but true impact will come when work is done at the grassroots level. The second element is education, where we work. We have just recently launched a sports science and research institute, which is as a starting point offering bachelor's and master's courses in physiotherapy and sports science. And we're bringing in best global practices into the equation. Have a very we have an outstanding international faculty, which will be empowering our people in these fields. That is one element. Second element of education is leadership in sport, where alongside the ELMS Foundation, we recently did a course for our sports administrators. Governance in sport has often been talked about over the years for the wrong reasons, but not much has been done to empower our administrators. So in partnership with the University of Loughborough, which is the world's premier sports university, we launched an online program to empower leaders in sport in India and administrators involved in various organizations leading their various sports disciplines and organizations, and really acquainting them with global best practices. So that they are well equipped to manage their sport well and to lead their sport well in current day in line with global best practice. The third element of education is again athlete mental health, where we are doing a lot of work for sports organizations on creating psychologically safe environments for athletes. It's about not just educating athletes on athlete mental health. It has a lot to do with educating the support team, the coaches, and also the leadership on creating a conducive environment. So we're doing quite a lot of work there. The third element is using the power of sport for social good. And that's where, alongside my friend, three-time Olympic champion Niccolo Compriani from Italy, we are working on a program called Make a Mark. This is basically born out of Niccolo's great inspiration that he drew from the international refugee team, which took part for the first time in history at the Rio Games. Niccolo is based out of Lausanne in Switzerland. So he did a selection of 25 refugees, and we picked three of them. And we started training them in the sport of shooting. These are human beings who have gone through immense hardship in life and needed to find a new refuge, needed to find a new meaning in life, and using the power of sport for them to do just that. And I'm glad to tell you that at least two of them have already become eligible to form part of the international refugee team. Of course, the final decision on their participation at Tokyo will be taken later in the mid of next year, prior to Tokyo, when the IOC decides the composition of this team. So that is the work that I've been involved in through the Abhinav Bindra Foundation. It keeps me, it gives me great pleasure to try and attempt to give back to sport and try and give back to something which gave me so much. It also keeps me back and connected to sport. Sport has been something which has had a great influence in my life and will continue to have a great influence going forward. But this is what we're doing and trying to do our best within our limited means to try and make some meaningful impact in the whole ecosystem of sport in India.
This is really, really heartening, Abhinav. And for listeners, you can make contributions to the foundation. I will include that in my the link to how to make a contribution in my show notes. So please do contribute generously to this, which is doing something, you know, actually pretty unique in terms of the holistic way sports and the ecosystem is being approached in India. Before we let you go, Abhinav, one final question. Actually, it has two parts. One is, do you have any favorite books or YouTube channels or, you know, any resources that you can recommend to listeners, as well as what are some of the key advice that you can give to recreational athletes? So, because obviously, listeners to my podcast are all, you know, recreational athletes and not, you know, elites like yourself.
Yes, in terms of, you know, there's so much available on the internet now. It's, you know, it's only one Google search away for whatever information that you're looking at. So I don't necessarily have anything particular which pops up in my mind. But just as an advice to recreational athletes, I think they would do well in reading up on the science of sport, on the science of what goes on in elite sport, and on how an athlete develops over a long period of time, the long-term athlete development on how that happens. Of course, when you're a recreational athlete, you're not trying to necessarily go to the Olympic Games, sure, or compete at the Olympic Games. But what you definitely can do is draw inspiration from how elite athletes train and what they are trying to do and the methodologies that they try and employ, use that. But I think more than anything, it is about finding balance in life and finding balance in what you do. You know, you have to continue to enjoy it, and you have to. It has to bring you a great amount of pleasure. Whether you're a recreational athlete or an elite athlete, the learnings from sport will always be the same across the board. And sport teaches you so much. Sport teaches you how to win, but more importantly, sport teaches you how to lose. It teaches you the necessity to work hard, It teaches you it teaches you how to follow the rules. It teaches you how to have a goal. It teaches you hard work. It teaches you integrity. And these are things that will, the learnings from sport will also help them in other areas of life and help your recreational athletes also in other areas of life. Sport is a wonderful teacher. And I do hope that for all your listeners, their journey in sport will be one which is A, full of fun and enjoyment, but also one which is very meaningful and fulfilling to each one of them.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Abhinav. Thank you for being such an inspiration. And, thank you for all the work you are doing both in India and internationally, and being such a great ambassador for the country the world over. So we wish you the very best. Thank you very much for generously giving your time for this podcast. So really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you very much to all the listeners. Please check out the podcast website, runfitraj.com. That is runfitraj.com. It has all the podcasts, it has all the show notes, and there is a very useful search function as well. You can reach out to me on my social media handles, which are Running and Fitness with Raj on both Instagram and Facebook. And you can also email me on runningandfitnesswithraj@gmail.com. Please let me know if you have any questions or specific guests you would like to see on the show. I also request you all again to please subscribe to the podcast and spread the word. Please also leave a review on iTunes, as it will help enormously to grow the show. We will continue to bring you exciting and interesting guests and give specific and actionable advice. Stay safe, stay healthy, and till the next show, goodbye.